I need somebody. Help. Not just anybody. Help. You know I need someone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to what I promise will be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio and just across the way, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, George. You have a very particular set of skills, ones that you've acquired over a very long career, skills that make you a nightmare for people.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Try to be consistent with it. And I think we're dedicated. I mean, anybody who's coming in during the Super Bowl to do this show, there's a crown for us for that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. We have Jason in studio tonight. He's got quite a story. We're anxious to get to that. But before we do, George, let's look at steps 8 and 9.
Well, steps 8 and 9 are we made a list of all people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And then 9 is made direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And the reason we do these together is they do function together. You just don't make a list and go, I'm done with my amends. I wrote it down. This forces us to think, to be humble, and to pray about it. Who all did I harm? And the other thing is then you got to go out and make amends. Now, one of the things as Christians that we have an edge over people that aren't, we got forgiveness in step 5.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have God's forgiveness, going to another person takes a lot of the pressure off, and you suit up and show up. But there's an interesting story on this. One of the founders of the 12-step movement, Dr. Bob, got all the way up to step 9, and he said, you know, he was the doctor in town. So part of the amends is, sorry, I was drunk when I operated on you. I get that, you know, a little reticent there.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm not going to do that. I don't need to do that. Well, what happened was he was sober for a while, and then he went to a medical convention. I believe it was in Washington, D.C., and he wound up getting liquored up and relapsed. When he came back in one day, he made all his amends. And then he was free and he never drank again.
Wow.
So I think it's a very important step.
Mm-hmm. George, when I look at Ephesians 4:32 and it says, instead be kind to each other, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God has, through Christ has forgiven you. All right, the being kind and tender-hearted, is that... Sounds like it's an important part of forgiveness as we're trying to seek reconciliation from people we've harmed.
Yeah, and the other way to look at it from the other person's standpoint, I guess for me, when somebody comes to me with an amend, my first thought is, trust but verify. Let's see. So you're in this program and you did all this stuff and now you're coming to make an amend and everything's okay, right? And for me, and I think for most people, the natural tendency is, I'll forgive you down the line. I'll see how you do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very conditional. I believe in the Bible it talks about that we're supposed to forgive others when they come to us or the Father won't forgive us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to do. That's the unconditional love that no matter what you did. But the other thing is when you go to make amends, make sure you make them. What do I mean by that? Let's say you owe somebody some money and you say, I'm really sorry about it. But you don't pay them back. And you can always pay $5 a week, $2 a week, whatever mm-hmm. you can do. But you have to be really earnest about this. And a lot of people get stuck here, Bill, and they never move on. What we want to do is have God totally lift us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the burden is light. But you can fight that, I think, by having resentments and unfinished amends. And so we want to free ourselves to be free indeed through Christ's help by doing this.
Yeah. So how do we address the hurt? Someone, you go make an amend to somebody, and they're hurt and wounded, and you just show up with this amend or this apology, and they say, maybe down the road I'll forgive you.
Cash works really well.
Yeah.
No, cold cash.
Foldable cash.
I think part of the problem there is when we're on the other end of that, it's almost a double hit.
Mm-hmm.
It happened the first time, and now I'm supposed to forgive you. And I think that can only come from God. You got to pray on that if you're the one who was offended.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm the one who was the offender, and that would be me, I have to let go of all the fear and just show up, suit up, show up, and do it. And there's a spiritual process that happens. We're trying to reconcile our relationships with our friends, our bosses. And Jesus said we're supposed to love our neighbor as ourself, and that's This is a tough one. Mm-hmm. But the freedom that comes from it, the promises, are fabulous. And I know you've been on the other end of that because you have never had a drink. Mm-hmm. And a lot of your friends are like I am. You know, people that once they got out of prison, you know, right. You worked with us.
Yeah.
But how was that? How is that for you when somebody comes to you and now all of a sudden you're going to be, oh, everything's okay now?
Well, you know, are you making it about me or are you making it about you? I guess that's part of the question I always have.
Okay.
And so maybe the question might be, are you in a position to hear a sincere apology? And maybe that would be a good place to start a conversation. You know what? Thank you for saying that. That's really lovely. I will, you know, can we just maybe meet in a couple of weeks? And that gives, you know, people.
You made it sound like it was something I did there. Well, that was really good.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I would show up with cash.
But it never hurts. Cash and prizes.
I think the willingness to do this involves a lot of humility and trust in God on both sides. Because when somebody asks you for forgiveness, and here I want to make this right, all those times you lied to me, you stole money from me,
exactly. And
now everything's okay. Yeah. That's not how it works with me.
Yeah. Well, how about I didn't steal money. I borrowed money, and I said I'd pay you back, and I haven't. And it's a lot of money. Like $6,000.
You know what I was just thinking?
What?
Every time I'd see my dad, I'd always hit him for 20.
Yeah.
And he'd go, that George, he never pays money back. Like, I'm the idiot, you know? And and I realize he's dead. So,
right. Sorry,
Dad. You probably don't listen to the show. But,
right. Yeah,
there are some things. But what I want to do is get spiritually aligned in Christ's will.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm on the other end, I got to give up some rights, too.
Say more about that, because that's really interesting.
Well, if somebody comes to you that has really hurt you when you tried to help them or be their friend or be their boss, and all of a sudden they go through this program, and sure, you know, you're real happy that they're going to stop using, but they're going to, you know, and get closer to God. But if you're on the other end of some hurtful behavior, oh, that's okay. And I don't think saying that's okay is true. Yeah, I would say, hey, you know, that really hurt me. I'm really glad that you're getting sober, but there are two separate issues here.
Mm-hmm.
We need to take care of this, and this might take me some time, but I'm really glad for what you're doing. But I got to pray to forgive you because right now it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the Bible says I should do that, but man, I feel like I'm rolling over here and saying what you did's okay, and it's not.
I had a conversation with a guy that I had met in a recovery group that I was leading a long time ago, and he is now in a very difficult situation, and he was feeling angry, and people were not forgiving him. They were not believing he could change or be different. Nobody was willing to lend him money. He said, it's love in action, and I don't see it. And I said, well, are you getting a chance to be in fellowship and community? Do you have a group you can go to and process some of this with? Are you getting to church on Sunday? And then he was pretty much saying, well, I don't really trust the people at church anymore, and the recovery community isn't a good place for me to go. So I was really like, well, I don't know what to say at this point.
Yeah, that sounds a little manipulative on his part.
A little bit, yeah.
Because the Christian community and the recovery community are always there. That's not everybody in it. But I think there's some reliance on God here to pray for the outcome. We're responsible for the effort. God has the outcome.
Mm-hmm. But when you think of his desire to be reconciled to people and he wasn't getting that cooperation on their end, I don't know what those people, if they've heard his story one too many times or they were feeling manipulated or I don't know. They were doing self-preservation? I don't know.
Well, the thing for me when I'm making amends is I'm letting go of the outcome. I'm doing the effort, and I'm going to give it my shot. And if you don't want to work with me, I don't need your forgiveness. Mm-hmm. I'd like it,
but
I don't need it. And the other person obviously can choose to not do that. But
yeah.
I don't think that's biblical.
Well, I'm choosing to work with you, and I think I should get like a Congressional Medal of Honor or something. Anyway, just a thought I had.
Easily, yeah.
Just a thought I had. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Jason's in studio. We'll hear his story in just a minute. You're listening to Real Recovery. So glad you're with us.
Air is for the way you look at me.
So glad you're with us tonight. We are in studio with Jason and George. As I've been studying Ephesians a lot lately, in chapter 4, starting in verse 2, it says, "Always be humble and gentle. Be patient with each other, making allowance for each other's faults because of your love." And we have faults. We got plenty of faults.
Because of our love for Christ.
Right.
Okay. So right. If I love Christ, then I should show that to other people. And that's where it gets hard.
Mm-hmm. And it goes on to say in verse 3, "Make every effort to keep yourselves united in the Spirit, binding yourselves together with peace." So if you're trying to make amends, there's usually a disruption of peace, and there's usually trouble, a brewing, and that takes a lot of effort. So Scripture says, be humble and gentle, be patient with each other.
I love that. That's a really good Scripture for this, because as we talked about in the first part, no matter what side you're on, there's some humility involved, and there's some pain here. You know, it's probably not the money. It's the fact that you trusted somebody and they ripped you off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the faith thing for me with God is trust. So when that happens in people, fool me once, but you're not going to fool me again. And we've got to kind of let go of that. But the other thing is, if you say you're truly sorry about what happened, what can I do to make this right? What are you going to do? Pay it back? Fix it? Some things you can't fix.
Is that an ego thing? George, when we have this ego thing, like, how dare you not pay me back? I mean, how dare you just try to turn your head the other way and act like you're not going to do it or pay me back or whatever it is, whatever's been.
Well, for me, I can tell you what it is. I had one of those a few years ago, and if you're ever listening to this, I still would like the money. But the biggest part, was that was a good friend, and I was very hurt that, you know, I thought, well, what other areas of my life did he? Gosh, they're calling us already.
Yeah,
Paul.
It's just so like us to get calls on the air.
That is amazing.
Yeah, that's never happened before.
Rebecca, you can look at that, and if it's worth talking to them, we'll put them on the air, but I don't think so. But I think I was hurt that I kind of wondered, well, what else did the person do? What was our friendship based on?
Of course, yeah, yeah.
It's breached, and I think what Christ would want for us by reading the Bible is coming together, as you said in that verse, and being whole and being loving. And it's hard for me to think about Christ when I'm mad at somebody because they ripped me off too. So it gets to me that I got to let go of that resentment, and it blocks me from the love, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Speaking of resentments, let's bring Jason on. We'll go right after him.
Yeah. George, would you introduce our guest, Jason?
Yeah. Jason is a person who works at Redemption House, a treatment center in Minnetrista, Minnesota. And the focus on that, we've had John Leonard on, and we've had a few guys, Blake and Justin, and what they look at is a worship disorder, Bill, instead of just a 12th step, and that we need a new heart to change. So it's always interesting having these guys on. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good. And so tell us about, where'd you grow up? What was your family life like?
We love stories here at Road Recovery.
Yeah, because we don't have to talk then.
Yeah, really. Right. Unscripted, unrehearsed. Let's have it, Jason.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you guys for having me on.
You bet.
First and foremost, and it's a pleasure, and what a great topic we're covering today, and except that it's resentments, and you're bringing me on for that, but no. I grew up in southwest Kansas, very rural upbringing, strong emphasis on family. I was the youngest of five. We were very spread out in age, 16 years between me and my oldest sister.
Wow.
And so I grew up in, I guess you would say, agricultural community, not really as much that lifestyle, but definitely that community. Grew up knowing what work was, strong emphasis on family, strong emphasis on athletics, and community, really. And I wouldn't trade that upbringing for anything. It definitely shaped me in a lot of ways, and it's something that we've kind of lost, I think, as far as Midwest values. But
George, I'm seeing a Norman Rockwell painting right now. Are you?
I am, but, you know, the long hair and the beard and the mustache kind of throw that to the side.
Yeah, I guess. I'm just the description.
No, it sounds great.
It does.
I like what he said, that we've kind of lost that.
I agree.
Because we have. Was your family church-going, Christians?
Yes. Yeah, we grew up. My dad actually worked to help get a community church started that I went to. And my mother, interestingly enough, on the other side was Mennonite. So we definitely had kind of a mix there. But I would say more along the lines of community church or Christ-centered, non-denominational growing up.
So big part of your life. My guess is you were an athlete growing up.
Yeah, I was. Didn't really have a choice. In our community, there's probably... You're related to everybody, so you got to watch out. But I probably had about 40 cousins total. And sports, definitely, the community revolved around the athletics, which is great in a lot of ways. So I grew up doing football, basketball, track, learning a lot of discipline there, and really doing a lot of work. I would say in a lot of ways – kind of an emphasis on education. And
this sounds like textbook. You're busy, you're occupied, you've got school activity, you've got extracurricular activity, you live in an agricultural environment.
I might have made a mistake here. I figured since he worked at a recovery center, there's some addiction.
If no addiction shows up, George, it's your fault.
This sounds more like Neil's show than ours. We have normal people. How old were you when you got saved?
I would say I was around 10.
This is my last show.
Yeah, it is.
10, okay, so you're 10.
Yep.
So when was your first use? Was it?
I didn't use till college.
Okay, so let's back up then. High school, you're playing basketball, track, football?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And my guess is you were pretty good.
Yeah, I was.
Okay.
I won state in hurdles. I really was throwing everything that I had into the athletic pursuits.
Oh, cool.
Now, just to add balance to this conversation, George, when he was 9, won the punt. Pass and kick competition.
We don't need to bring that up. I might have peaked a little.
I
might have peaked a little early.
You think?
You know? Do you think? Okay. Now I have a resentment. Anyway, going forward. So, did you get recruited by a lot of schools?
I didn't get recruited. I probably could have, but I was pretty much raised to go to Baylor. Our family has a tradition of going to that school, and that if you're familiar with the name Michael Johnson. I wasn't at that level of competitiveness, so I went more for the education. I did get an academic scholarship, but, I wasn't going to be able to compete at that level in that conference. So I was okay with that. I honestly was pretty burned out with that pursuit. And as I dissect that and I really look at it, you know, I was building a lot of self-righteousness at that point, and I was kind of becoming resentful of that life. I was ready to party. Ready to kind of cut loose and have my own identity.
Mm-hmm. How did that start?
But you're a believer and you're off to college now. So why did your faith and values end up on the shelf?
Man, I would say
you don't have to answer that.
No,
so it's not an attorney, you know?
Right.
I did district attorney style,
right?
Didn't I?
That was.
Yeah. Never happened. I deny it. It didn't happen.
Perfect.
Yeah, so what did you do? Why'd you cave?
I would say I was ready to cave, very weak going into that. I was pretty much prepared to be, I would say, I wanted what the world had to offer. I wanted to take that work, apply it to success, work hard, play hard. And when you add that, I'm a pretty social guy. So you add that into a fraternity life and all those things, and God definitely gets put in the background or relegated to where he's not the first and foremost in your life. And it gets real easy once you get on that path, that becomes your new normal, and it's amazing. I kind of compare it to boiling the frog, so to speak. It's the
sure.
Next thing you know, you're crossing lines that you never thought you were going to, and you just – I don't know. I guess your identity becomes more and more shaped into that. And I continued the work hard, play hard into my college career. Kept grades up, everything like that. But my emphasis, my reprieve, I suppose you would say, was what I had earned as far as the weekends, and then it just continued to progress from there.
What were you drinking, or?
Yeah, drinking.
Okay, yeah. So what degree did you graduate with?
I graduated Bachelor of Arts in Business with emphasis on marketing and performance improvement technologies. So, kind of boring guy.
Can you dumb that down for George?
Yeah. Well, you know, here's what's interesting. He had an identity as an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to college. Excuse me. And these guys are bigger, faster, and better. So my identity now is I'm going to be the work hard, play hard guy. And it's a great school. Baylor is a great school. So you had to study. And then on the weekends, you're kind of a weekend warrior on the party scene, and you're drinking. You graduated, and you're still just drinking.
Yep.
Okay. Where'd you go after graduate?
I went to Dallas, went into real estate, and sold new homes. So I took I didn't really follow the path of those other than obviously utilizing the marketing, but there was just an incredible opportunity with that high money-driven. I was money-driven, for sure, in that pursuit.
Were you still going to church, or did you stop during college?
No, and I had stopped in college, And I would say
Did your parents ask you about your spiritual life, and did you have to fake your way around it, or how honest were you with them?
They did. You know, I would go on occasion, but it was just basically for the sake of saying I was going to church at times, but it really had... I'd relegated that to being
You just
behind
needed a
me.
Token appearance so you weren't absolutely out of going altogether.
Correct.
Gotcha.
But
okay.
There is some effort there, Bill.
There is effort.
You know, showing up with a hangover is a big deal.
Right. Deception.
I hope you went to a Baptist church with no air conditioning. So did you have success right away selling homes?
I did. I did well. That industry, man, that just fit right into what I was looking for. Work hard, play hard. You give up your weekend lifestyle, but, man, in the meantime, you're putting away a lot of cash, and they look for people who are money-driven. And so I definitely – that became the new emphasis within my identity was I'm going to be successful, and you get a high, I would say, from – the next sale, and just that, once again, engaging into that work ethic.
Mm. Okay, George, we've got a lot of stories still to unfold here in our discussion with Jason, and we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to continue finding out more of the story. Thank you for tuning in and telling your friends about our program. We love the fact that our listening audience continues to grow because we hear from you, and we so appreciate the encouragement. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
All is well again.
Welcome back to the show. We're so glad you're with us tonight. What a fascinating story. George, we want to speak the truth in love. And we want to grow in every way more like Christ. And it sounds like Jason's story is headed that direction. But right now there's some stinking thinking going on. Play hard, work hard. Identity is going to be in his success, his money, and his party life.
Sounds great. You know, by worldly standards, you know, we can all relate at that age. How old were you then?
21 through like 25.
Oh, sure.
That's prime years. A little bit of money in the bank.
Careful, don't disclose too much.
That's right.
But money was the big deal, wasn't it?
Yeah. So you're getting a cool car maybe, and you're getting a little bit of lifestyle, and you're liking it.
Yeah, I mean, it's money, and really you're looking at power and comfort. Where are you finding your comfort?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And, you know, I think that was really where things started to erode for me. I God showed me as I look and I think about that more and more. I could look to the end of me, and I was like, man, I do not like what I'm becoming. I hit that, and then what? Getting that success, trying to make and complete yourself through success was running to an end. I was like, what's my next pursuit? And there was nothing there. And I've come to look at that really as a blessing, because it was, I look at the fact that God has sown eternity into our hearts, and I was looking at nothing eternal. Everything was world. Everything was, what can I get? I was a ultimate consumer and a consumer-based life.
Mm-hmm. That's some honesty there. I like that.
And so, I like Chandler. He always said, this breaks it down when I'm working with guys, and so I'm going to relate this to my story, but there's really four areas that we look to complete us. This is in recovering redemption. We look to ourselves. We look to others. We look to the world through those pursuits. Or we look to religion, which is kind of another version of ourselves, just dressed up. And so at that point, I was like, you know what? I need to get into a relationship to complete me. And that's kind of the typical progression, I think. And I didn't really love the idea of that, but I was ready to move forward in that. And that's when my life really started to shift. I had some hard family circumstances that really I was struggling to deal with, and praise God, I was struggling to deal with without him, that really exposed how weak and how vulnerable I really was. And I'll just say, you know, the next 20 years of my life really has been walking that out with him. If I look back, faithfully drawing me back to him. However, just that's the way that he's exposed, how self-centered I really have been in my life. And so when I was, it would have been in 2004, I was still living the party lifestyle. I went out late one night. I would go and I would frequent bars whenever I had off time. I'd stay late, close it down. I was drinking pretty substantially. I was walking home and I was attacked, set on fire.
And you were what?
Attacked and set on fire.
That's what I thought you said. I said a double check.
It hospitalized me, and I would say that event, it took me about 3 months being in the hospital. I had 7 sets of surgeries during that time. Man, God was faithful. At one point, I know I had probably 1,000 people praying for me at one time. And you would think that that would be enough to teach me a lesson, but it doesn't happen that way.
Wow.
I came through that with a lot of peace. Believe it or not, I think borrowed from others, and just how faithful I look at that phase of my life as seeing what it is to have those around you, the power of those around you, of God being petitioned on your behalf. The blessing of that, because I certainly didn't receive it. I was humbled, and I did know what it was to come through, you know, just excruciating circumstances. And there was a lot of fear around that. That was the first time that it kind of got exposed as far as, like, where I was in life, what was important, what I was following as far as money, alcohol, exactly how bad that situation was, which actually surprised almost everybody.
Mm.
Surprised most of my family. I was a pretty independent guy. I always have been. Definitely a weakness for me, because that it wants to get us alone first, right? Alcohol always wants to get us alone, and our sin wants to get us alone. It wants to isolate us. And so I was very good at keeping people at bay. So that was the first time I was exposed that family and friends were really concerned at the level at which I was drinking, because my doctor said if I'd continued to drink at that level, that I probably wouldn't make it to 30. And so that put a lot of fear in those around me, because they didn't realize how intense my situation was. Coming out of that, I did quit for 2 years.
How'd you do that?
You know, I would say I focused so hard in getting well, because I had to do intensive rehabilitation I poured myself into that. So I would do 4 hours a day, stretching my skin.
Okay, I was about to say rehabilitation as a result of your accident, attack, whatever.
Right, of the burns.
I'm a little stuck there only because when you say attacked and set on fire, that's so disturbing because I've never heard that before. I'm just trying to figure out, was it motivated by someone that you may have known or someone was out to get you or?
Most likely gang initiation.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
I had come through a pretty rough area of town.
Okay.
Walking home.
Okay.
So that they did not catch him.
Okay.
The crime scene actually got compromised because of a rainstorm that night. I was taken to the hospital by my roommate at the time.
Wow.
So I walked home. I got myself home. And then he took me straight into the hospital.
Wow.
So the protocol that set everything in motion for the fire investigation for the arsonist to get out there by the next day, they really didn't have a whole lot to go on.
Now, I think I interrupted you, George. Did you have a question or did you already forget it?
No.
I mean, you're excused if you have.
No, I was going along the same lines you were, that it's just kind of feel like I'd like to throw up, It's how traumatic. I mean, we've never heard that.
I haven't.
In 6 years, in 20 years of counseling, I've never heard that.
Yeah.
How did you keep that together mentally?
I'd love to say I did. But, you know, I would say once again, escaped into just focus, what I knew best. I know how to, I've known how to throw myself into things. And so I would do, you know, 2 to 4 hours a day, just in recovering from that. And I will say, you know, the Lord did bring me a lot of peace in that, a lot of time to reflect on Him. And just where my life was, where I was headed still. But that, I wish I could say, man, it was just a time of incredible spiritual growth towards Him, but not really because it still was not with eternity in mind. Mm. You know, the kingdom of heaven, I can't point to that truly.
So you have 2 years sobriety. I'm assuming that after a while that your rehab is for 2 years is going pretty well. And did you feel like you felt good enough to have a couple beers?
Yeah, I did. And it wasn't long, you know, obviously you go back to where you were drinking before, almost invariably.
Really?
Yeah, really.
How long did you hold it together? Because you're kind of on drinker's probation when
drinker's
you go back.
Drinker's probation. I like that.
Yeah,
that's true.
I can handle this.
You know, I knew I couldn't handle it, but I just, you get stuck in that cycle. And I would say, you know, I was drinking at a pretty heavy level, anywhere from 12-pack to a case, pretty consistently throughout the week. I don't know, like, I've never hit in my life the dependence to where I've had withdrawals, which is just amazing at the level actually at which I drank. But I certainly don't know why. I don't know why that was. But yeah, I got back into it, sure enough, and it just became part of my life. And really, it correlated with me going back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Once I was back to work, I felt like I was entitled to it. Same cycle, right? Same cycle.
So how long did this go on?
Well, for about 15 years.
Oh, my gosh. Any legals in there? You get any DUIs or anything?
One, yeah.
Oh, one. Everybody gets
Everybody
one.
Gets
We're not going
right?
to quit on one.
Right. Yeah, that wasn't enough to teach me a lesson. That's for sure.
Teach me a lesson.
You know, because, Jason, I'm hearing your story, and I can only imagine or wonder if when you get jumped by a gang possibly doing initiation and you're the victim, and you know that you had left a bar really drunk, walking home through a bad neighborhood, did this thought ever cross your mind? I got to stop drinking and doing stupid things. Look what it cost me. Look what happened.
What if
I was just home watching sports that night with a bowl of popcorn and my feet up?
Of course it did.
Okay.
And not only that, I would say the thing that I did was I really went into defense mechanism mode with that, because I didn't like others telling me that either. And, you know, that points to the fact of how much difficulty I was having at that time of dealing with the problem of pain and the problem of this is a broken world. So I was kind of like, you know what, random chaos could have happened. I even justified it by, you know what, circumstances happen. The good, bad things happen to good people too.
Mm-hmm.
Any retaliation go through your head?
I would say maybe some, but that is the one thing I will say the Lord was just really kind to me in. I guess I moved past that. I asked to forgive in that situation. And I was like, I got to get moving forward. I feared being stuck in that. I feared being stuck in that anger and resentment. And the Lord did give me a reprieve from that. So I got that. But
was there any anger or resentment towards God for allowing it to happen? Did you have to work through that, or that just gone?
I would say that was just gone. And I can't explain why. But I just had peace about that, because there wasn't anything to do to change it. You know, it's kind of like when you deal with everything. I just made that one more thing.
Okay.
That there isn't anything you can change. It's move forward. And that was almost immediate for me. It was like, I've got to move forward.
George, I forgot this part of the equation. If you go and have a burn on your body and you have 7 surgeries, you're probably in pain. And you're probably wanting to medicate yourself from the pain. You know, would people go, boy, you shouldn't be drinking again? But, you know, we're going to discuss that when we come back from the break. So glad you're with us tonight. We're talking to Jason in studio. Don't go anywhere. We're going to finish up our conversation in just a minute. We are back. We are back. Talking to Jason in studio. And we are wrapping up our conversation. One more segment. George, I forgot this part of the equation. If you go and have a burn on your body and you have 7 surgeries, you're probably in pain and you're probably wanting to medicate yourself from the pain. You know, would people go, boy, you shouldn't be drinking again? But
I guess just my ignorance, I don't know. I took it as prescribed. But that was during the period where I had, you know, two years where I didn't drink. And so I used them normally. I don't know. I think, you know, God blessed me in the fact that I didn't.
Think? Gosh, yeah. Bill, there's a lot of grace here.
A lot of grace.
You got a guy who's an alcoholic, and he gets prescribed the most addictive substance that is prescribed, and he takes it normally, and he doesn't use, and he was upset about this for a while, but he's moved through it. There's a lot of grace here that can only come from God. And if you're listening tonight and you're struggling with some things, think about just going to Jesus, because that's the source, and that happened to you.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the blessing of life is seeing God's grace throughout your entire story. And the blessing of being able to see that, him granting that to you. And that is only accomplishable through Christ and what he's done to transform us. To see how wayward the things that we are protected of. I mean, goodness, not that this is substantial in eternity, but the burns on my arms. If I had been burned another quarter of an inch, I would be a double amputee on both sides. I had about a 20% chance of actually coming through that. And it certainly wasn't my strength. Maybe my determination, whatever willpower you want to call that. But, I mean, the reality is I wasn't supposed to live, and I definitely wasn't supposed to recover the way that I did. I wasn't supposed to have motion. I wasn't supposed to really have a normal life. And unfortunately, burns are highly intense. And not to put a plug out, but, man, you need community in that, too. There are some good communities out there. I engaged in a few right off the bat because it is traumatic. It is. You most suffer through post-trauma. It's there's nothing more painful than burns. Mm. I would say that. And it's misunderstood because generally you are a victim or you've done it to yourself or all those things, all that guilt and shame that comes along with that. It's not like you're a survivor per se. You know, there's always cancer survivors and then there's burn victims. It's just the way that it's phrased, but not to go off topic of that, but
it's not off topic at
all. Man, I encourage you guys that are coming through that because it is intense and it's something that really, when you come through that trauma, there's a lot of people want to shut down. And so I guess maybe even just the challenge that was put before me of like most people shut down kept me from shutting down, obstinance, but I don't know. But I just say, you know, you can turn everything over to God on that too. He gives you the power to sustain through it and there's a reason. There is a reason. I've lived a life of really reflecting on what the problem of pain is. I love C.S. Lewis' book on this, and then I'll move forward. But as far as the rest of my story, so I'm getting to I've moved down to Arizona, moved from Dallas, and this would have been about 8 years ago. Was getting back into real estate then, and really just. Once again, repeating the cycle of burning out, getting into it, drinking, burning out. The drinking's moving into my day instead of just being relegated to off time. And it's causing all kinds of relational conflicts. I'm back in it. I'm pretty much at full-on despair. I've come to a place again where I'm like, I can't stop. I've tried to stop. Doesn't work. And really knowing that that's my refuge. Got some news one afternoon that my nephew had actually been involved in a situation where it was either a suicide or he was murdered in a bad little gang deal also, which probably triggered some things for me. It was revolving around drugs. I know he had gotten into that. He was only 18. And that, man, that news, it devastated me. I was pretty much done. I was sick of being. And my girlfriend at the time brought me an AA book and was like, you got to do something. I mean, you just have to do something. I read through it in a day while drinking. However, it resonated. Everything in it resonated to me. And if I look at it, I can't believe that there are people that actually live this way. There are people that actually walk this out. This is more similar to the Christian life that I ever understood. And, you know, in God's grace, I got another year and a half sober. I went to AA, did the 90 and 90, walked it out faithfully. And I'll cut a long story short, man, I learned a lot as far as knowing what it was to be broken. But once again, I realized that I'm working a works program and there's no hope. I need to be looking at what it is as far as eternity. And thank God he was calling me back to that, of, okay, Jason, I want you to look at who I am. Mm-hmm. Stop looking at what you can do to present yourself to me, look at what I'm doing for you and truly looking at that. And I hope that's a good transition here for us. I came to Redemption
House. I don't want
you
to go ahead here. We're going to make this a two-part show where you come back. And I think the reason for that, Bill, is that I don't want to rush through this. This is a unique story. And from where you went and the back end that you have about processing all this, I think is really interesting.
It's very deep.
Godly wisdom that you have, and go back to the story. You go to AA and you got in touch with your brokenness.
Right.
Can you describe that a little bit?
Sure. I coming to the realization that I'm powerless over my situation. Like getting honest about that was substantial. And, you know, that's step one, you know, and turning turning that over because I've got a life demonstrated of trying to get by on my willpower, right? Just even the inkling of the common grace of that, that God reveals, helped. I mean, and obviously, naturally, even when you're, you know, if you're able to stop drinking, because I'd been drinking so long, I finally had returned to hope. Just even removing the chemicals returned me back to a state of hope, and just in life.
What was that hope?
That hope was that I didn't have to live that way, and I'd started really looking at the fact that, you know what, we are spiritual beings. So I guess you would say a reigniting of my spiritual existence that I don't know. I think I'd tucked away to really the Christian life being more like I'm saved, I've got an insurance policy, when there's just so much more. You know, it goes back, if you want to look at the beginning of that story, of really functionally how you fall away from the faith in college. You're like, okay, I've got my insurance policy with the Lord. Now it's time to do what I want to do. Well, it doesn't work that way. Well,
George, I've got all kinds of questions, and I think it's wise to try to explore part two with Jason. But where were your folks in all of this, and your 40-plus cousins that you grew up with? Were they longing for you to return to the faith? Were they wandering off themselves? What was happening in that world?
I think, you know, they were praying for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that they were, like, thinking I was outside of the faith as much.
Okay.
I was pretty private. I'm a private guy in that regard. So I would definitely have conversations that were more about, I would say, family dynamics.
Okay, so they knew what you wanted them to know.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate. I would say that...
Yeah, well said over
thanks,
there.
Thanks, exactly. George. Every once in a while I come up with a gem.
Right.
Sounds like you have some experience there.
Absolutely. And it wasn't until I got that point of desperation within AA that I was able to just be like, man, I've got a problem. And I came forward with it.
Yeah, because we start off with this iconic little upbringing in Kansas,
sure,
with sports and wheat fields and everything else, and a loving family that went to church, and a Mennonite mother that was probably ultra-conservative, I would guess.
Yeah, not
okay.
Not as much of a picture of what you may have in mind on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, they're all stereotypical
but sure,
in my head. So yeah,
hard work.
She had the horse and buggy.
Oh,
and
yeah,
the electricity.
Yeah. Yeah. We did have running water and electricity.
Oh, you did.
So, yeah.
Oh, that
the 40 cousins thing, though, I can see where you get confused.
Maybe we won't do part two. Anyway,
What's fascinating to me is going back in your story and then how you talk about where you are today spiritually, like common grace. And we didn't want to rush through the end here, mm-hmm, just to get done. And we want you to come back. And
sure,
I know you're willing to do that because I know you. So, Billy?
Yeah, well, I would say let's end this story tonight just being grateful for the work God has done in Jason's life. And if this story sounds familiar to something you're struggling with, Jason said he started to have hope when he stopped. And he got community, and he got involved, and Christ came in and did only for him what he can do. So we will continue this, so the punctuation mark will be ellipsis, which is dot, 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 to be continued. And we'll have Jason on again for part two. Thanks for listening to Real Recovery tonight. So glad you joined us. We look forward to our next visit and conversation with you. If you want to pass this episode on to friends and family, myfaithradio.com. Thanks so much for listening. Great having you with us. Have a great week. Good night, and God bless.